My name's Matt Campbell. My brother Jeff Campbell died on 9/11. He was attending the British firm Risk Waters conference on the 106th floor of the North Tower. I've been trying to get to the truth and some justice for my brother for a very long time now. I started questioning things that didn't seem right, in particularly the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq in the early days. But it's really been in the last sort of 8 years or so that my energies have switched to getting my brother's inquest reopened. And yeah, so, you know, to basically have a lot of evidence that wasn't presented in front of the coroner when he had his first inquest to be reconsidered.
Well, look, one of the main things is surely these inquests or whatever, you know, they would be happening over in New York City or something. How come anything is even happening like that in the UK?
Well, I guess under British law, if someone has died in suspicious circumstances or, obviously has been murdered, whether abroad or at home, there has to be an inquest. And in the case of Jess' murder, because it was abroad and only when remains are, in this case, identified and repatriated, does an inquest have to be held? And so he's already had one, and it was a joint one with nine other people. And it's the findings of that which we're going to challenge. And there is a peculiar mechanism in the Coroner's Act law in the UK that allows us to petition the Attorney General to reopen his inquest. And there's some specific circumstances or reasons why you can get an inquest reopened. But it's peculiar to the UK, not the US. So, if you know, in the US, they don't have things called inquests.
Are there other families as well of people who are involved in this, or is it just you, Matt?
Well, it's myself, I guess, is the main driver behind it over the years. But my entire family, so my mum, my brother Rob, and my dad, are also applicants to the Attorney General. Also, Jeff's fiance, Caroline, who still lives in Manhattan, is also going to be applying to the Attorney General.
Can you tell us a bit more about your brother's job and the circumstances, what he was doing that day?
Yeah, so he didn't work at the World Trade Center. He worked for Reuters, who were based up in Times Square. And he was only there to attend a conference, as it was organized by a British firm called Risk Waters. And, you know, I mean, I actually got an email from him at 2 or 3 minutes past eight in the morning to say, you know, very quickly, I'm running late for the Risk Waters conference. And sadly, he got there in time. And obviously, that was the last time I heard from him. It was hard. It wasn't his normal place of work. He was actually there on a kind of a networking mission. Because we were looking at him getting involved in my own software consultancy company over in New York. So it's been hard to kind of carry that over the years.
Well, yeah, I bet. Yeah. So, I mean, what was he actually doing with Reuters? What sort of work was he doing?
Yeah, his background was economics, but he did an IT course and ended up, I guess, specializing in an area of risk management. So he'd worked previously at banks pretty much across the world. But ended up working for Reuters, who had a good line in products that help banks do risk management. And so that was his area of expertise and got involved with projects and stuff. And even from his base in Manhattan, he also, you know, continued to travel the world with his job. So he's pretty good at what he did.
So what was September the 11th, 2001 like for you? Obviously pretty horrendous, but how did the day develop?
Well, I was on holiday with my wife and two young kids in Lanzarote. And my mum had actually flown out the day before. We'd been there for a week. And so she arrived on the Monday. And, you know, we were just down at the beach, I guess, on Tuesday. It would have been, probably 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. My wife had gone up to, I think, settle my youngest in a buggy. And she'd seen a lot of people crowded around TV screens around the bars and whatnot around the beach. And she sort of came down, you know, fearing that something had happened in America. And anyway, I went up there and it took probably best part of a couple of hours to make contact. I didn't have my mobile phone with me. and just, you know, calling a network of people whose phone numbers I could remember, and then ultimately getting hold of my brother Rob, who had spoken to Jeff's fiancée Caroline, and, you know, established that he had gone to the Risk Waters conference. I hadn't seen the email by this time either, so, you know, it was probably a couple of hours, and by that time, obviously, the towers had both collapsed. I think one had collapsed by the time I actually got up to look at the TV screens and try and figure out what was going on. But it was a very sort of hazy, rubbish telly, as you tend to find in bars back in those days anyway, on holiday. And so, yeah, it was only when I really spoke with Rob did I you know, realise that, that Jeff was actually there. And then, you know, the chaos that ensued after that, you know, it was mad. You know, part of the fact we were actually stuck with no flights to get back to the UK, let alone get across to America, which we did eventually. Reuters were very kind to us, and they got us flights out on the Saturday, just a few days afterwards.
And these most recent efforts, the petition to relook at the inquest, how's that all going? And, you know, what's the latest on that front?
Well, yeah, so I've probably since 2014 had this idea that, you know, reopening the inquest with the tons of evidence that's out there showing, you know, that, that the towers were brought down by explosives and incendiaries. I started, I guess, in earnest 2016, a little bit of fundraising just to see, test the waters with a barrister that I'd chosen. And really, I'd say in the last 12 months is where it's all accelerated. So I was in contact with Ted Walters from Architect Engineers for 9/11 Truth for a fair few years. And last year, we just sort of discussed the possibility of A&E getting involved and helping with the necessary fundraising of, you know, through their supporters to raise the necessary funds to get a barrister to work on an application that, you know, we could obviously submit. So we've been busy pretty much since August last year. And, you know, although it's slower than I thought it would be, it just is the nature of, you know, getting together all the statements from experts, statements from eyewitnesses, first responders, statements from other victim family members, and just everything that's involved. It just, you know, it just takes longer than you think. But I think we're in a good position. I'd be still be hopeful that we could submit at the end of this month, but I wouldn't be surprised if it sort of bleeds into May. But it is, you know, it's imminent. We're nearly there. We're just trying to, you know, finalise everything and put together the best application we can, because we've only got one shot at this, Tony. You know, the Attorney General, based on our evidence that we submit, and, you know, showing that there's a lack of inquiry in certain areas, on the basis of that, it's Michael Ellis, who's the acting Attorney General, and his team have to make a judgment as to whether they will grant their authority or not to make an application to the High Court for them to quash the original inquest and to order a coroner's court to reopen a fresh inquest. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where we're at. So the key thing is to get the authority granted by the Attorney General.
I mean, this business of explosives, you know, surely if you see a building and a plane crashes into it, you've got raging fires, it then collapses. Surely you don't need explosives. I mean, for most people looking at the September the 11th attacks now, all these years later, I mean, isn't it sort of intuitive that the planes crashing into the buildings, then raging fires, you know, they, of course, surely the building's going to collapse. And I mean, I don't wish to be rude, but I mean, that's what most people believe, surely, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's the official narrative that was put out fairly early on, and then backed up with, you know, reports by the various authorities in the US. I mean, there's a couple of things there. You know, prior to that day, you know, no steel framed high rise building had ever collapsed through fire. Notwithstanding, okay, obviously there were impacts into the two towers, but you also have the Building 7. Which was a huge building in terms of relative to towers that we have in the UK, 47 stories. That wasn't hit by a plane. It suffered fires and some damage to the, I think it was the south side of the building. But that collapsed about 7-8 hours later. And part of that collapse was at free fall acceleration for about 2.25 seconds, which, you know, basically says there was no resistance, no structural support whatsoever underneath that building. So, you know, there's a couple of things that I guess are unusual. So although an official narrative has been applied to that, saying that it was the obviously the fires from the subsequent planing packs that brought down the towers, the interesting thing to note is, I mean, from just purely you know, an investigation, is NIST, who were tasked, that's the American organization that were tasked to investigate the collapse of the towers, never actually investigated or went through the model of how the towers would collapse. They'd only investigated up to what they called collapse initiation. The actual mechanism has never been formally investigated or, you know, reported on. But, you know, that aside, you've got evidence of thermitic reactions. You've got, you know, an incendiary, an unexploded incendiary is being found in the dust. There's a peer-reviewed published paper on that. You've got oddities of, you know, the way the South Tower fell, which, okay, doesn't directly involve my brother's death, but, you know, it toppled over and yet it still managed to sort of pile drive the rest of the building down. But then you've also got the peculiar constant two-thirds of gravity acceleration of the North Tower, you know, without any slowing of the descent of the building at all for the first sort of four seconds. You've got, like I said, numerous eyewitnesses who gave their statements. The authorities had these statements, but they were kind of dismissed out of hand. So you've got, I think, a third of all first responders, and you're talking about 150, 160 people who are, you know, firefighters, paramedics, you know, all reporting explosives and belts of what they call it, you know, sound like a belt of explosions going off. You've got oddities with seismic data that's showing, you know, explosives just going off prior to the plane impact in both buildings. And, it, you know, it kind of goes on. There's a lot of stuff out there, but my point is, you know, it comes back to none of this was considered at all by the coroner where my brother had his joint inquest. You know, I'm not blaming the coroner. You know, she could only deal with what was presented to her at the time. You know, for me, if I was going to blame anyone, it would be the Met and the counterterrorism officers that were involved in preparing the report that she obviously had to rely on when she weighed up the, you know, what was presented in front of her and gave the narrative that she did.
So how do people follow the case, Matt? Online, I guess.
Well, yes, once it's submitted, you know, we're not expecting anything to come back for, well, probably minimum 3 months. It might be, you know, up to a year, I guess. So, you know, I'd hope, you know, Daily Mail, who did Sue Reed did a good piece a week ago on, I guess, the inquest and the quest for justice for my brother. You know, I'd hope that they would follow up the news of actually submitting the inquest. But probably on Twitter, so my Twitter handle's Matt Campbell 911, so M-A-T-T Campbell 911 on Twitter. I'll obviously keep people posted as to what's happening. But, I mean, the real hurdle, that first hurdle for us to get over is getting the authority from the Attorney General. Once that happens, and I'm pretty confident that's going to happen, we've got, you know, a lot of evidence, sorry, not a lot of confidence in that being the case, because we've looked at all the previous cases where, you know, the Attorney General has been presented with new evidence, insufficiency of inquiry, etc., and we're well over the you know, the bar, no pun intended, as to, you know, what would be required in order to get a new inquest open. So yeah, my Twitter is the best thing, and hopefully, you know, not just alternative media, but also some more mainstream media would also pick up the story, you know, certainly if we get it into the High Court, which incidentally, just to sort of put that out there as well, you know, once that application's been put into the High Court, you know, we've not been able to find a single case where the High Court hasn't pushed that on to, you know, quashed the inquest and pushed it on to the coroner's court. So, you know, it's all about the case on paper with the Attorney General. And like I said, you know, we're well over, in my opinion, what's required to get her his authority.
Well, Matt, it sounds to me like there's a tremendous amount of new evidence there. It would be an absolute travesty if they didn't do this. And let's hope the great British justice system does justice in this case. Matt Campbell, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Tony.